Blog Talk Radio.
The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron. A podcast featuring Elvira Love and Deborah Voith, two out of the broom closet professional witches with over 70 years combined experience of making magic. This is a show on the LMC radio network. During each episode, Elvira and Deb will help you create rituals, cast spells, make potions, and much more besides. They'll spend time speaking about different goddesses from all over the world, paying attention to the ancient reverence of long-ago cultures, and infusing it with a modern perspective. Elvira, Deb, take it away.
Well,
taking it away.
We are. We're putting it into taking it away and making it happen.
Yay. So, well, here we are, and obviously we are technically starting our new month of, you know, our subjects. So, you know, at this point, we are, you know, it's planting, you know, seeds of renewal and growth. And, of course, Gaia is our subject, and she is definitely a very interesting and intense goddess. But before we delve into all that, I think we'll try and catch up on each other's week, because I'm sure there is much to be at least expressed in such a short space of time about that. So I'll go ahead and start at this point. And one of the things that Deb and I have noticed over the time that we've been doing these shows is that our subject matters seem to come into play in our lives and the people around us, our clients and, you know, family and things. So with Gaia, she's a primordial goddess. So I have been experiencing primordial energies in the way the weather is, because one of her little aspects one of the things is storms. And the fascinating thing about this is that we have had major storms coming in, thunder, lightning, hail, tornado watches. And, wow.
You know, for me, it's not, you know, too uncommon with everything but the tornado watches. So it's been a little bit intense, but I've also noticed that my clients, which are all over, you know, they're not local to here specifically, have also been very emotional. And very, primordial energies of, you know, oh, my God, you know, things of nature. It's not that we don't have issues and, you know, when we talk about them with our clients. But I noticed the same flow. And I was beginning to at first be overwhelmed by all of this, and then kind of sat down and, you know, did some more research and things here with the subject. But I noticed that it was like the whole experience was getting it from all levels about what, and I will do a definition of primordial and personification and some things about how we talk about this particular deity and energy, but it definitely made itself known in my life in many different ways, and some of them very personal and others less personal, but I had a lot of real insights just in general about, you know, how this kind of energy, you know, really works in our lives, whether we're, you know, going to work with it as a energy and a magic and a deity, or it just happens to be part of what's going on. And that is, you know, where I feel this aspect of Gaia is, it permeates all of us, whether we are truly conscious or not of it. But that's been my aha and my experience of this week. I'm going to turn it over to you, Deb, and let you tell me what's been going on your end.
Well, this has been a really busy week, but a good week. I mean, we had this past weekend, we had our Beltane Festival, which was a lot of work, but it seemed like it went pretty well for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And then I have been feeling so much more like I've been connecting with nature. I mean, we've actually had a couple of rainy, stormy days too, but they're kind of flipping back and forth. Like, first we'll have a couple of days of really, especially for my part of the woods here, for Wisconsin,
mm-hmm.
Just really beautiful weather, where it's just about intoxicating, and it's a great feeling, just walking. I've been taking a lot of walks lately. All of the lilacs are in bloom, and they smell beautiful. I mean, especially after it rains. I noticed yesterday, it did rain the night before, and just going for a walk yesterday morning was awesome because the air smelled so clean, and all of the lilacs, it smelled really, really powerfully. And also, I have a Korean spice bush in front of my house, and that has a really, really sweet smell to it too. It's nature's waking up. I had a couple of new clients this week, which is kind of nice. And I worked with my sister Sharon this past day at our local shop, Altered State of Mind, and I had a few readings with some new people there too. So there was a lot of new people I was connecting with this week. And then, just talking about goddesses, I will be going to see a show later on here about another goddess. But she's the goddess of soul, which is it's a show about Nina Simone. And I think one of my favorite songs is her rendition of I Put a Spell on You. So we will be enjoying that in the very near future. But otherwise, just, it's interesting because here in the springtime, the spring manifest or comes about in fits and bursts. It'll be just gorgeous for a day or two, and then it'll start raining, and we didn't get hail, but just a little bit of crazy weather like what you were talking about, and it's just all part of the process of the earth kind of waking up here after having that long nap for the winter. And It feels good. It feels really
right.
Yeah.
Well, and I know because we're both in technically central time, we kind of get similar weather. Sometimes it's not as dramatic. It might be more up in your end. It's, one way very dramatic, and here it's not. But it has a certain feel. And for someone who's come from the West Coast where, you go north and you get more rain, that's the biggest thing that you can have. It's kind of a definite feat. Yes, we have Mother Nature and we have the earth coming back up, but I think without as dramatic of an effect as it is in at least where, in the central area here going north and south. So, I definitely understand, things waking up. I mean, the only thing I have to say is we've had, and I think this is in general all the way around, is that everything, all the pollen, everything blooms and all the pollen starts and everybody starts getting all the fun stuff.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden you have all the rain and everything drops down and everybody's going, oh, God, yes, I have, but I have a little barometric pressure headache, but, better than, sinus stuff. And then, it fluctuates like that up and down and then it evens out for the summer. But it's definitely makes you stay present with what's really going on. I mean, for those of us that have this experience, it's like we're right here. We aren't going to be anywhere else if, even though our job or our business or whatever requires us to kind of push a little ahead, it still keeps us present in the moment. So, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, and it's all, you know, about kind of like adjusting. And, you know, the earth is adjusting. It's going through its changes. And then every spring, it's like I end up with watery eyes. You know, it's like I get sinusy and stuff like that. But it's just like, you know, I look like I'm crying or something a lot of times. And I just, I'm so happy that it, and it seems like every year it happens in the springtime where for like a week or two, I'll just have like watery eyes. And and I just noticed for like the last 3 days, they've stopped doing that. And so it's just like, yay, it's like clockwork almost. I know that it's going to happen. I complain about it every year, but it's just like, you know, then, you know, my body and my eyes adjust to, you know, all the different, you know, pollens and different things that are in the air, and then I feel better.
Wow. Well, that's it. So let's kind of dive into Gaia here and sort of get started, because I know her story, her mythology is incredible and very detailed. So I know we're going to want to kind of play with that for a while. But let's start with the idea of what a primordial deity really is. And it's basically the deepest, most fundamental nature of the cosmos. So it is a fundamental force as well as a physical foundation of what we have going on in the, you know, in our, the world, in the environment. And when we have that, there are certain things that we put on them that we want to make human, but they're not. It's not human characteristics. And so when we talk about personification, which is the other part of primordial, we personify things. So, for instance, with Gaia, we personify the aspect of Earth as her, as the Gaia, and that basically is, you know, pointing out the human qualities or attributions that are more personal in nature and more human, so that we can relate to something that is basically non-human. And so, you know, looking at it from that definition, we look at her, what she is, you know, where she is in the, you know, she's basically Gaia, and, or Gaia is Greek. And, of course, she has her Roman aspect, but we're dealing with the Greek. So we'll kind of stay with that, even though I know that I will just quickly say her name in the Roman is Terra Firma, or Terra Mater, Terra Mater. But in the Greek mythology, she basically emerged from chaos, and as the big word, because chaos is another primordial deity, kind of, you know, generically they put it as male, but it really has no gender specifically. And she becomes this, this energy called Gaia, becomes the supreme mother goddess of all the immortals and mortals. And so from her, all life comes, you know, and then you come down to what we know as, you know, a physical manifestation called Earth and all those things on Earth. So, you know, it, it kind of comes as the supreme creatrix, because that would be the feminine version of creator. And with that, of course, you have the reflection that as a mother symbol, she is, you know, nature's abundance. She's associated with a variety of plants and herbs and nature aspects. You know, we have grounding energy and nurturing. And basically, from being the first deity or concrete energy coming from chaos, then she, of course, creates, because she, you know, she, I'm doing a very minimized version because I'm going to let you get into a lot of it, but she creates because she's lonely, okay? So she creates basically Uranus, which, you know, at this point becomes, you know, sky, and then she winds up having a lot of fun with him and creating a lot of nice titans, because they're then called titans. That's the term that takes on this very big group of a lot of different beings. We'll call them, because some of them are deities and some of them are beings, and we can talk about that maybe now or later. But after that, you know, she, you know, kind of goes into this other aspect and creates all these different aspects of energies. And, you know, from there, there come a series of dramas, which I'm going to turn over to you now so you can play with some of that drama.
Sure. Who doesn't like a little deity drama?
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah. So she, like you said, she created Uranus and also then became the lover, the mother and lover of the sky. Mm-hmm. And they did have a bunch of children. they had the Titans and who were actually the parents of many of the Olympian gods, and the Cyclopses and the Giants and the Hecatones, which were even bigger giants, and also the Pontus, or the from where, you know, all the primordial sea gods came. So you would think that all should have been, you know, copacetic, that as she created herself, you wouldn't think that she would have to deal with much deity drama, but this was not the case. It seems that every time an offspring was born, Uranus became very jealous, and so he hid all of the offspring inside of Gaia, and she could not find them. I guess he wanted Gaia's exclusive attention. So, in some, you know, and this is the way that I kind of see the story is, I do personify it a lot, which is really hard to do because Gaia is so massive that it's hard to personify her. But I would say that at this point, you know, in the story, that Gaia felt really tired and heavy due to carrying all of these children deep inside of her. And yet she couldn't see them. And so that was when Cronos, her son, wanted to help his mother. So then the next time Uranus wanted to have sex with Gaia, Cronos, with his mighty sickle, castrated Uranus, and his semen just kind of spilled all over the place. And every place that it went, another newborn sprang forth, like the nymphs and some of the other gods and goddesses. And probably one of the more notable ones was when his semen touched the ocean, Aphrodite was born out of or from the sea foam. So then, when you know, there's no short supply of lecherous deities. So Cronos freed Gaia, but also has sex with her, and she bears 6 children from Cronos, which were Hestia, Demeter, Hera, Hades, Poseidon, and Zeus. So then Cronos kind of ends up doing the same thing to Gaia that Uranus did, imprisoning the sons and trying to control Gaia. Cronos swallows up child as they are born. But Rhea, another deity, hides the last, and she wraps up a stone to give to Cronos instead, and he swallows the stone instead. So Gaia ends up kind of siding up with Zeus in his rebellion against his father, for she was angry with him for binding her Titan sons and trying to, you know, rule over her. And I think that in the saga of Gaia's story and, like, her evolution, we see that she makes the choice to fight against her descendants in a series of three major battles. And to those descendants who is, you know, warring against her is a male descendant. And so I think that many kind of see that as the patriarchy trying to overthrow the feminine divine. Yeah. So her Gaia presence in Greek myth is full of a lot of different complexities and conflicts and contrasts. And what I've seen just from studying is a lot of scholars say that her worship in ancient Greece did in fact decline because her role was supplanted by the gods of Olympus.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting that they say that the decline in her worship and the demonizing and slaying of the snake or the serpent is one of Gaia's primordial symbols and a symbol of archetypal feminine energy, that it kind of represented the death of the sacred feminine at that time that was brought about by the pantheon of male gods. And you know what I thought? It kind of, as I was reading stuff about that, I was like, you know, many sources say like that she rebelled against Uranus and that she, quote unquote, assisted Zeus in overthrowing Cronus. You know, but then I was thinking, you know, did she really? I mean, because if she was there first, why would it be said that she rebelled or that she assisted in the overthrowing? It would seem to me like what was happening is they were trying to overthrow her.
Well, because of their binding her womb with the dynamic of, because her creativity was her power, is her power. And if you bind it, then you're starting the process of control. And I would probably say, if you were going to say anything, she was rebelling against being bound. And whether she was assisting one or the other, it didn't matter. She wanted to get control back of her own, you know, her own womb, her own empowerment, her own creativity. And then, you know, I mean, this is looking at it now from the stories and the dynamics. I'd look at it as, you know, the rebirth.
It makes a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm. Of her, of the empowered female, because again, and I don't say we are in the process of something very similar now in our world. We'll leave it at that.
Yes,
so,
absolutely.
So you know, we're not necessarily political in our show, but yes, this is very poignant.
Yeah, and that whole, you know, as above, so below, seems to really apply.
So we have about maybe, give or take 6 minutes before we break. So, you know, I like where we have gone with this idea because it will spill over into, you know, the next part of our show. But it is very important to see that Gaia is the supreme creatrix. And one of the things, you know, we'll talk about it later. I don't want to bring it up now. Of some of the dynamics of that in, you know, the from after Greece and onward. But for us now, looking at her is very empowering. And, you know, one of the things, I know we have the picture that we used for our show to publicize it as, you know, this woman full-breasted, you know, and you know, like sometimes you see her with holding the earth between her legs. Another one is also a full-bodied woman reclining, holding a cornucopia, you know. So she is, it is, embodiment of, and if you look at her, she is also the Empress in the Tarot deck, where it is a full-bodied woman.
Yes.
So I know we have different you know, different levels of understanding of the tarot cards, but it still comes down to the full embody, the full figure, the full embodiment of the feminine energy, the creative energy. And, you know, we say, you know, virginal, one unto ourselves, is not necessarily never having had sex. It has to do with empowerment. So,
So
let me see where we are with our, we have 3 minutes. Do you have anything you want to throw in right now before, you know, I'm going to shut up and then we'll break at in a couple of minutes?
Just I love the whole the story of her being born of chaos, because chaos, like you said, is neither male or female. It's neither dark nor light, and it's just this. I always, the way that I conceive it or perceive it, I mean, is more like, you know, just this swirling, endless energy that has no order, and she was the first to bring it into order. And so it's just, it really, just reading about her, her story as this primal being, it just made me appreciate it more. And I think even as I was just taking my walks, I really was just, it was making me just notice everything around me so much more and just feel like grateful, you know, she is like the primal mother, and a lot of her story is about protecting her children.
whether she really likes them or not, she protects them, and I think that is a truism for many of the people who have children. I mean, they may not like us a lot at times, and it's also that no matter how deeply we love our children, there are times that we are, you know, we would say unhappy, but there are things that we don't like about the circumstances, but that, you know, in terms of the depth of love, it's that we have the right to like or dislike, but we love that which we have created, you know, and we'll protect it. So, and I think it's time now for us to break. Boy, that's coming fast. Okay, well, Nagashima, break us away.
You're listening to The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron, a radio podcast on the LMC Radio Network. Stay tuned, as more magic is coming your way right after these messages. LMC. You're listening to the LMC Radio Network, broadcasting out of Forestville, California, on the World Wide Web at LuckyMojo.com. The LMC Radio Network is a media alliance whose excellent shows include The Lucky Mojo Hoodoo Rootwork Hour with Catherine Ironwood and Conjurman, Sundays, 3 to 4:30, Mystics, Mages, and Magical Places with Reverend Art and Reverend James, Mondays, 4 to 5:30, The Crystal Silence League Hour with John St. Germain, in syndication, Tuesdays, The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron with Elvira Love and Miss Phoenix LeFay, in syndication, Tuesdays, The Now You Know Show with Professor Porterfield, in syndication, Wednesdays, and The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron with Elvira Love and Deborah Voith, Thursdays, 4 to 5. All time specific, add 3 hours for Eastern, sponsored by the Lucky Mojo Curio Company in Forestville, California, and online at LuckyMojo.com.
Okay, all right, well, now with this segment, I am turning this over to you so that you can talk about, you know, the more modern perspectives and different things that you have on your plate, and go for it, my dear.
All right. Let's see. So Gaia is believed to be like one of the or I would say the very first deity to emerge. And as far as like taking like a look at like the modern part of how we perceive her, there's well, there's many ways to worship her, but I would say that a lot of the people that do primarily worship Gaia are called Gaians, or they practice Gaianism. And so it's believed that she's both like the mother and the sustainer of the world. And they do different things to honor Gaia through their actions. And the whole thing, like, I think that Gaia became a little more popular in recent times, just with all the environmental stuff. But also there was a theory that popularized modern Gaianism, and that was called the Gaia Hypothesis. And that was something that was a man named James Lovelock. He had written Gaia, A New Look at Life on Earth, which proposed that the Earth, like he saw the Earth as a singular organism rather than a set of a bunch of separate organisms. And so this theory or this conception extended, you know, to the pagan sphere, and she is very much at the center of most, you know, Earth-based worship. So she's, I think with, like some, it's interesting because some see like Earth-based spirituality as well as other forms of paganism as not deity-centered at all. And they do not embrace polytheism or monotheism. But many do see Gaia as part of a pantheon. And so I would say like Gaianism is, it can be both. It can be where it's kind of like more of a philosophy, but it can also be like that earth-based spirituality. And so I think just to kind of sum up what that is, like Gaianism is an earth-based approach to spirituality and seeing, way of seeing the earth as a super complex organism. And the interpretation of the earth as a goddess is also like very much incorporated into that as a whole. But I think it's just, you know, embracing nature. And so, you know, there's like a couple of different things that make me, like just that whole connecting with Gaia, either, you know, whether you do it with her as thought of her being the deity or the thought of her being, you know, just this manifestation or being the earth itself. I think she's all those things. And I think that a lot of people, I know for me, and I've heard a lot of other people say that they feel a lot more spiritual when they're in nature. And that's like a given. I mean, I don't know anybody who doesn't feel more relaxed and just more spiritual when they're out in the woods or in nature. And one of the things that made me really think about how we're connected is that whole thing about Schumann's resonance. So the like the Schumann's resonance is a phenomenon that resonates. It's called the pulse of the planet, and it really kind of is experienced in our collective. And so it's like a rhythmic frequency that, I forget what it is, like 7.83 hertz. So that's what the Schumann's resonance is. And so it's the frequency of the Earth electromagnetic field. I know I'm kind of tripping over some words here, but it's basically generated between the Earth's surface and ionosphere, and you know that's the place where the Earth's atmosphere meets space. And so, what's interesting about it is it's referred to as the Earth heartbeat or pulse, and so it's an actual thing, and it has like this natural rhythm, and this electromagnetic pulse is said to resonate with our human brain waves, and it influences our state of consciousness. And so many researchers and spiritual seekers believe that when our own brain waves align with the human resonance, we experience like a sense of calm, balance, and enhanced well-being. And so it really, this pulse serves as a harmonizing force. And it supports our connection with the earth and actually fosters like a really, really profound sense of unit, our collective consciousness. And just to give like an example is a couple of notable events have happened where there have been like really remarkable peaks in the Schumann resonance. And so it's made a lot of scientific types very curious and speculating about its impact quite a bit. And so one of the events was the Japan earthquake. So in March of 2011, when a devastating earthquake struck Japan, the scientists noticed that the Schumann resonance had a really notable spike. And so it researchers have believed that that peak reflected like the intense emotions and the collective shock experienced by humanity during that day. And so it's interesting because there's been other things that have happened that have caused scientists to wonder about that. So I think that you know, is a fascinating aspect. And, I believe that we are very, like, we're all connected. Like, I believe I'm very animistic in the way that I think. I think that, all beings have a spirit and that we all connect with each other on a spiritual level. And I believe that we all connect with the earth. And that whole Schumann resonance, I think, is just, you know, something that kind of shows that, like shows kind of an evidence of that going on. So going into, I just wanted to mention that because I thought that really, I don't know, it's like a lot of things about topics that we talk about are so esoteric that having something like that where it's it seems to be like a more of a solid thing that you can say like, oh, wow, you know, look at this. I just thought that you know, that is really an interesting thing.
Well, it is, and I think that you've got a point when we have something that we as humans can say this is measured and this is what it is and this is, you know, it. Remember, we're tactile. We're humans. We're in a body. We like those things. We need those things. We want those things. It sounds like, you know, Jack Nicholson on the wall. But it's more about that process. So I think that by having that, it it gives validity to our connectedness, even when there are so many that are, you know, respectful of that connection.
So, oh, yeah.
My
I've even seen that some believe that the resonance acts kind of like a thread that weaves together our collective consciousness. And it's also believed to influence our thoughts and emotions and are interconnected with one another and with the earth.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people believe that, like, if you can meditate, there are different things that you can listen to that has that hertz, that human's resonance incorporated
mm-hmm.
into it. And, you know, it is said to amplify our own intuitive abilities and actually facilitate spiritual experience.
Mm-hmm.
And enhance our empathetic connection. And so I think that there's almost like this little dance between, you know, the earth's resonance and our consciousness, because we are so connected. And this really kind of invites us, you know, the earth mother Gaia as a living being. And
right.
kind of to, you know, take a look at how deep connected we are to her. Yeah, it's something, you know, we think about ourselves, the first sound that we hear is usually our mother's heartbeat within the womb. And, you know, this human resonance is like the heartbeat of the Mother Earth. And,
yes.
yes. And I think that there's, you know, some very... yeah, and so, you know, going beyond, I just wanted to mention that, but going beyond that, I think that, you know, that whenever we are outdoors and just noticing the things around us, I think that we're interacting with Gaia.
Mm-hmm.
And that all of the, you know, material manifestation of this nature and plants and trees, you know, and everything around us is part of that. And I think we can do things like, you know, and create, you know, an altar for her, or we can create an altar outside. And then just, you know, making offerings, like anything from nature, like a feather or a special stone, shell, or an apple, or another food item, you know, all of those would be like a really appropriate offerings. But I think
mm-hmm.
that going simpler is actually better.
Mm-hmm.
As long as it's, you know, the offering isn't something that's harvested in an inappropriate way. Like, we wouldn't want to take, like, endangered plants or take a stone from a prohibited area.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
Other ways is, like, offering libations of just, you know, pouring wine or other beverages into the earth and saying thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, that's definite. Now, I know that, you know, it's interesting because some of the stones that I kind of found that were part of it were interesting because,
mm-hmm.
you know, of course they have jasper, and in that there is, you know, moss jasper and blood jasper and, you know, picture jasper and, you know, cat's eye. And I thought, well, phantom crystals came up. The one that I really love is green obsidian, and it's basically the ash solidified. And I actually have some from Hawaii, and because of it being Pele's blood and the way the Hawaiian tradition is, I had to ask permission, and I asked permission specifically
mm-hmm.
with the help of the kuna I was working with, because at the time, you know, it wasn't that I was trying to become a kuna. I just wanted to honor and respect
mm-hmm.
you know, the primal deity of that culture, but also the land. And it you know, it's been with me for decades now. It's beautiful. But that was one of the things that I found, and I'm going, I have that, you know, that kind of thing. So, and the other is petrified wood, which I don't know specifically, but any other place,
mm-hmm.
but in Northern California, I know the petrified forest is a big thing right out of the Santa Rosa area on, in Sonoma. And, of course, I have more than one time walked there and you know, asked and picked up pieces. So, but I know it's also sold. So those are things that are stones that not only can you offer back to her, but that you can use to connect with her.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, definitely. I think that can also do, like, you know, burning incense or using essential oils. I think that if I did that, I would probably mix, like, kind of earthy and floral tones, like cedar and patchouli, maybe some jasmine, and then dedicate it to Gaia. Can write like a petition or a question on a paper or on a bay leaf and burn it. Or, you know, or I think with, you have a special place in nature. I know I love a good dirt crossroad. You can write a petition or write a small piece of paper as a communication to her and then bury it there. To, you know, to communicate with her directly. And then I always like the idea of making it a routine or a tradition of going to whatever that special place is that you have in nature and then going into a meditative state, connect with her more deeply. I think that's one of the one of my favorite things.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting you're talking about places. One of the things that I love, you know, to go to caves, and I have made a point here when I would visit, now that I'm living, is to go to the various caves that are here. Some of them are parks, some of them are private, but there are some that my daughter and her husband have found that are part of public land, or somebody, you know, one of the people that they know has land that has them on it. And there, it's very profound because, you know, of the, and it's not about the bats and all the other stuff. It's it's the feeling when you go into that cave. It's like, oh my gosh, you know, you're enclosed by the earth and in a good way. And so I think, but if you can't, then maybe you can find like a courtyard or your house or a special place that's very enclosed. Just as a humorous point, in one of the things you're supposed to do when tornadoes come is you go to the most inner part or the lowest part of your house, which becomes your enclosed cave or an inner closet, or, you know, even your bathtub in a bathroom that has no external windows, and you go in while this tornado is being either possible or very real to stay safe. So you go to the womb, you go back to the womb.
Literally,
which I find very fascinating about, you know, how primal that becomes in terms of that. So we are getting close to our end, so we've got like about maybe 5-6 minutes before we have to do our ending. So if you have a few more words, then I will probably wrap up with something I wanted to say, but I want to make sure you know, I know you kind of have been moving forward on what you're talking about.
Yeah, you know, I think just, you know, we as humans need to remember that we're not standalone set of beings, that we're part of a living system of many beings, and the Earth Gaia is at the center. And I really believe she is like the heartbeat of all of us. And I think maybe in ancient times people understood that a little better because of the myths and stories that were passed down. Knowing that the Earth itself was the embodiment of Gaia and the mother to all, and that you shouldn't mess with her.
That's true.
So I think, you know, it's these times have I'll just say quick that technology has advanced faster than we've been able to keep up with it. And so I think people are worried about climate and other things, you know, and nature and stuff like that. And I think that I think if we just are very aware of it and we're trying to go in the right direction, I think we can turn things around into a healthier planet. But we just need to embrace, you know, that understanding of a planetary obligation and just, you know, at the heart of that, just being ethical and caring for our planet.
Mm-hmm.
That's all I got.
Okay. Yeah. Well, one of the things I did want to quickly mention with her powers, storms and volcanic activity are very much part of her power, but also the healing power for injured people and helping them. You can call on her and work with her that way, as well as for basically becoming strong and durable and using your physical abilities to get through things, you know, because of the durability of the earth, her mother. And so that was something I wanted to share, because part of what I was going to say, and this is where I kind of diverted a bit from Gaia, but it was about being able to bring forth life without any other partner. And it's basically called Parthenogenesis. And it actually does exist in invertebrates, in plants, algae, fungi, mosses, but invertebrates like insects, wasps, bees, ants, and aphids. And the interesting part, in a few vertebrates, the American crocodile, the Komodo dragon are part of it, and then in what we would call the fish and areas, starfish, jellyfish, and...
Wow.
Yeah. So I didn't,
wow.
You know, I took that and went, it exists, it really exists. And
wow.
So, you know, I mean, we have those other things like, okay, we have the Amazon, the women that were, you know, one unto themselves, and they produced, you know, from them, you know, they were, you know, for the most part, they created from themselves. But, and Gaia is the example of that. But I wanted to put that in there because I was so stunned by the actual, because I had heard this somewhere, and I'm like, yeah, sure. So I kind of went searching and found that. So that was a real kind of like trip. But the other part of it is in the cosmology of the Greek consciousness and Gaia, it was, you know, and I'm definitely anything but a flat earther, so let's get that straight. But they saw it as a flat disk, and it was encircled by a river called Oceanus, and it had a dome above, and that was the heaven, so sky heaven, but it had another half dome called an inverse dome, called Tartarus, which was considered the pit, but that was below. But if you think of it as it was a sphere, whether or not they knew that it was, you know, that Earth is a sphere or not, but you see that as a sphere divided into two halves, with the center, quote, being where people live. You know, you kind of look at that and go, well, you know, it may not be in that exact way, but that was the general idea. I mean, when you think about it. So, I kind of wanted to put that out there, because
wow.
I know that was, you know, we've got a lot of people that kind of go into the consciousness of flat Earth, but it goes beyond that. And I think, you know, we're standing on the flat part of whatever we see. So I consider that... you know, what is the microcosm of, you know, we are standing here, but there's this macrocosm of a sphere above us and a sphere below us. So we are in a sphere, whatever they want to say.
That's
so
interesting. Yeah.
But, and, you know,
imagery.
The imagery and, you know, the idea that in the this consciousness, all was created from Gaia. Oh, sorry, Gaia, and then of course in the biblical process, and a lot of the they took it. It was from God. He created from Himself all things. So I think we kind of touched on that at the beginning, but I think at the moment we're looking at this process of bringing a balance back rather than a one or the other, because, again, that dualism separates, and I feel Gaia is holistic. She is, you know,
yeah.
It is all. So, but
oh, yeah.
I think we're at our time. I'm just checking. We've got a few minutes here that we have some closing things to say. Do you have anything you want to say before I start our closing?
No, I think that's it. I, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, there's so much about her.
Yeah, I know. It just, you kind of have to back up. So,
yeah.
Obviously, next week, our topic will be spring cleaning of inner selves. And that's going to be a lot of fun. And as far as being able to get in touch with Deb or I for any guidance or, you know, help. Deb can be reached through www.readersandrootworkers.org or hoodoopsychics.com or www.bewitchingbee.com, where she does bewitching magical supplies as well as readings. And I can be contacted through readersandrootworkers.org or Hoodoo Psychics or www.elvyra.com. And at this point, I think, and both of us are on Central Time, so in case anybody kind of gets lost as to where they are, they have to kind of work through that. So I am now turning it to Deb to do our closing statement, and we will talk with you and be with you next week.
Thanks. Well, which for everybody, till next time, which on, which well, and which wisely.
Thank you for listening to The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron, a radio broadcast on the LMC Radio Network. Our podcast airs live every Thursday at 4 p.m. Pacific Time, 6 p.m. Central, and is available for download. Questions or comments on this show or ideas for upcoming shows can be sent to our website at witchpriestessandcauldron.com. That's witchpriestessandcauldron.com. Until next time, merry meet, merry part, and merry meet again. Blessed be.